Again, to be with you today, it's an honor for me to be allowed to come and to talk to you on this matter, on anything. It's just an honor for me to be able to do that. I am by nature not a public speaker, so it's not always easy, but I really appreciate the ability to do this. I told him I was going to stand up there, but I believe I'll stand down here. What I want to talk about today, or in the Bible class period, is about where we are at, where we live in the world, but not other one. I'll probably move around in Bible class, so if that's all right. in the world and not of the world. In John chapter 17, we have the Lord's Prayer. A lot of times, Matthew chapter 6, I believe, is referred to as the Lord's Prayer. It's when Jesus taught his disciples how to pray. John 17 is actually the Lord praying to his Father. And what we're going to look at in John 17 is what he said about the topic on the screen. In verse 11, he said, "Now I am no longer in the world, but these are in the world." He's talking to his apostles. "But these are in the world." In verse 14, he says, "I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world." And I want you to pick up on those phrases. He's no longer in the world. These are in the world, but now these are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Verses 20 and 21, he goes on and says, now he's praying here, and like I said, he's talking to his apostles. But now in verse 20, he's talking about us. He says, "I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me." So that phrase, we've all heard that phrase, I'm sure, before, that we're in the world, but we're not of the world. But really, what does that mean? And I hope of class participation. Sometimes when I ask a question, you know, a lot of times the speaker asks a question, he don't expect the audience to answer, But if you've got a response, I'd love to hear it. So what does that mean to you? We're in the world, but not of the world. Okay, we're born into this world, but we don't have to live the worldly life, worldly things. Okay, anybody else? That's pretty well spoken. Let's go on. That is what's called a paradox. Just to get you thinking in this line of thinking. A paradox is a true statement that is either contrary to conventional wisdom or seemingly absurd. And to say that we're in the world but not of the world kind of sounds absurd or contrary to what we'd really think of. How can we be in this world but not of the world? I want to give you another one just to kind of get you thinking. Another paradox. From death comes life. Now I want to ask you now, what comes to your mind? There's three or four things that I think should probably. What comes to your mind when you think about that paradox? From death comes life. I'm sorry? Baptism is a good example. What else? I'm sorry? Oh, okay. All right. Kind of going along with from baptism, yes? I'm sorry? The death of Jesus, outstanding. I'm hard of hearing. Okay, that's one I hadn't even thought of. Exactly right. One is in 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about, which is usually the first one people think about sometime, maybe the second one people think about. And that's the seed. 1 Corinthians, Paul said that, basically, I'll paraphrase, unless the seed dies, then life can't spring forth. We don't plant a full-grown corn stalk. We plant a seed, and that seed deteriorates, and from it comes the plants. I already mentioned the conversion of a Christian, baptism. And baptism, how is that? Just tell me, how is that from death comes life? Obviously, we die to our sins. I think it's Romans says the old man dies, we rise a new creature. And then, of course, the death of Christ. Christ died that we all may live. And so from that paradox, from death comes life, we can understand that. Now, these are in the Bible. Their Bible contains lots of paradoxes. Proverbs 1:5-6 basically says, it's not to cause confusion, but to make us think and learn. And we can, because when you think about it and you read about it, uh, it it makes you learn what he's talking about. So then, what world do you live in? What world do you live in? I'm going to put a couple of verses up there. If someone would, I'd like to read these, or have someone read them. If somebody would just turn to the first one, and somebody else go to the second one, and somebody else go to the third one, please. 1 John chapter 2. If somebody's there at 1 John chapter 2, read verses 15 through 17, please.
Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever.
All right. We are not to love the world. And someone mentioned earlier that we're born in this world, but we don't have to live the worldly life, the things of the world. But we're not to love the world. What does he say if you love the world? The love of the Father is not in us. If we love the world, you know, that can be a very difficult thing, isn't it? It's hard to live and work, take care of your family, involved in all the things that you have to be involved in while you're living in this world, and really then be able to totally separate yourself from this world. So that can be a difficult thing. But he said, we're not to love the world. If we love the world, the love of the Father is not in us. Somebody read James 4 and 4. All right. These are very plain statements from the Scriptures. Friendship with this world separates us. We're at enmity with God. We're separated from God if we're friends with this world. So we can't love this world that we're in. We can't be friends, have friendship with this world, or else we'll be separated from God. And somebody read Romans 12, too. All right. So, we're born into this world. We have to live in this world. We have to provide for our families through the means of this world. We bear other children into this world, but yet we can't love this world. We can't be friendship with this world, and we cannot conform to this world. So, we have to be basically separate from the world, don't we? That's why the Scripture says that as Christians, we're a peculiar people, because we're not like the rest of the world. In Jesus' example, we got to live in this world, though. Jesus came into this world of men and lived just like we do. He lived as a human being. The Bible says he was tempted in all manners, just as we are tempted, yet without sin. We have difficulty with the latter part of that, but Jesus was perfect. In John 17, though, he says that he was not of this world. He came to this world. He lived in this world as a human being, but yet he wasn't of this world. I want you now to turn to 1 Corinthians 5. 1 Corinthians 5. If somebody would, when you get there, read 9 and 10. First Corinthians 5, 9 and 10. All right. Now that's an interesting verse there, isn't it? He tells them that he doesn't want you to associate with sinners. Who do we associate most often in our daily lives in this world? Sinners. Sinners, isn't it? Jesus said in Matthew 7, you know, that the majority are going down that broad path to destruction, and a few are going down that narrow path toward eternal life. So we associate with sinners. Well, he's telling them here, that he told you not to associate with sinners, not to associate with sexually immoral people. But verse 10 is a key. He said, I did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world. Then he goes ahead and he talks about the covetous extortioners. He said, because then you need to go out of this world. The only way we could not associate with sinners in this world is to somehow be on another planet, to leave this world. But we are. Verse 11, though, I want to point out verse 11. Exactly. Very good comment. You're exactly right. He's talking about becoming like them in this world, but yet we're supposed to be different. We're going to see that. Verse 11 is important. In this chapter, he's talking about sexual immorality. He's talking about in the church there. Back up to verse 1. And verse 11 then, he says, but I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is a fornicator, covetous, idolater, reviler, drunkard, or extortioner, not even to eat with such a person. He's talking about church discipline, but it's interesting that he points out the only way you're going to disassociate yourself from all sinners is to leave this world. And you're exactly right. We're to influence them. This is a true statement of too many. Too many times we want to be accepted by the world, and we also become tolerant of sin. How many of you have heard that word tolerant today? Yes. And they're asking us essentially to be tolerant of sin, aren't we? The different lifestyle and godly marriages, we're supposed to be tolerant. Abortion, we're supposed to be tolerant. But we cannot be tolerant of sin. We cannot. And it's not our desire as Christian to be accepted by the world. Sometimes we allow this world to consume us. We lose sight of exactly what world we're living in. I pointed that out as I started. Sometimes we get so wrapped up, and it's so easy to do just in living in this world, that sometimes we lose sight in our quest, and it's not really a quest, in our desire to take care of our families, to provide for them, to be involved in our children, and we need to be involved in our children's activities, hopefully to leading them to Christ as well. Sometimes we become too much into this world, and though then we forget, but we need to always be reminded. So there's the question. How can we be in this world, yet be not of this world? And the Bible gives us the answer to that. The answer to that is, we must live as lights. We must live as lights in a world of darkness. We are the light of the world. In Philippians 2, 14 through 16, he says, do all things without complaining or disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ that I have not run in vain or labored in vain. He wrote this in the first century. Let me ask you, does that phrase, crooked and perverse generation, sound like where we're at today also? It does, doesn't it? And every generation since that was written has been that way. Crooked and perverse generation. Satan is well and alive in this world. But we're supposed to be lights in this world, shining as lights in this world of darkness. Down in John chapter 15 and verse 8, though, he gives us some more insight. He says, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, that you be my disciples. So you will be my disciples. What comes to your mind when you think of that phrase, to bear much fruit? I'm sorry? Producing the fruits of the Spirit, okay. What? Furthering the kingdom, okay. Good points. Really good points. Anyone else? The reason I say it's good points, ordinarily, and it bears exactly what it's talking about also, is bringing others into Christ. You know, it talks about the tree. The fig tree bears figs and so forth. And so as a Christian, we should bring other people in to Christianity. And that's also true. What you said is also true. Because we do need to bear much fruit. And notice them together. We're supposed to shine as lights in this world of darkness. And we're supposed to bear much fruit so that the Father is glorified. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14, Jesus tells us there, he says, you are the light of the world. The church hasn't been established yet when he wrote this, but there's no doubt he's talking to believers and he's talking about us even after the church is established. So when you see that verse and you read that word that says you, don't think of somebody else, think of yourself. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. In Matthew 5, verse 16, notice that our light shines, or it does not shine, either way, by our good works. He says, let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So the contrast to that would be, if we're not doing good works, then our light is not shining, is it? Good works. What are good works? If good works is what people can see in us and glorify Father, our Father in heaven, then help me out. Name some good works. Working with people who don't know the Lord. What else? Benevolence, okay. When you get to thinking, you'll think of a lot of them. Visiting the sick, okay. Okay. All right, he's on a roll. Good. Yes. All these things are good works. But you know, there are other good works. I put some up here, and some of you mentioned some of them. Do people always see your compassion to somebody else? That can be done, and basically nobody know it, can't, doesn't it? Even maybe showing love to someone else. There are good works. What I'm trying to point out is there are good works, but there are also visible good works that we can do. Visible good works that we can do also. And as you think about those thoughts, perhaps where you're seated, you'll think of even some of those. There's no doubt that we live in a perverse and crooked generation. Philippians 2 and verse 15. Listen to these verses here. In Acts chapter 13, verse 10, in verse 9, Paul is on the Isle of Paphos, and he meets Elymas the sorcerer. Now, in verse 9, Elymas the sorcerer is not performing his magic or his sorcery. It says that Elymas is perverting the gospel in order to get followers after himself, in verse 9. And notice what he tells in verse 10. Look at the strong, strong language. O full of deceit and all fraud, you son of the devil, you enemy of all righteousness, will you not cease perverting the straight ways of the Lord? Perverting the gospel for the reason of getting a following after himself. Acts 20 and verse 30. Paul speaking to the elders at Ephesus. He said, also from among yourselves, from the eldership, from the leadership, will men rise up speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after themselves. Acts 2 and 40, after the church was established there in Acts chapter 2 and the great sermon that was preached, down in verse 40, he says, with many other words, he testified in exhorting them, be saved from this perverse generation. Let me ask you, are people today perverting the gospel of Christ? Absolutely. Why are most of them perverting the gospel of Christ? To get a following after themselves. I'm sorry? Monetary gain. Oh, yes. Fit their own needs, right. But there again, their own needs is what they think, and they're getting a following to follow after themselves. You're right. That's true. Perversion of the gospel. I got that statement underneath there, and you've already answered it. Most modern culture has radically distorted and deviated from God's standards of truth and righteousness. And that's a true statement. That's a true statement. So we started out by showing that we live in this wicked and perverse world. We're not part of this wickedness. We cannot be part of this wickedness and perverseness. And how Jesus said that we're to be lights in this world to show the world a better way. So here's another question then. How do we let that light be like the stars at midnight? Daniel talked about how the stars at midnight light up the whole sky in this moral blackness. Philippians 1, 27 through 30 tells us how. by our conduct. By our conduct. We talked about our good works, and they kind of go hand in hand. But let me ask you a question. Do people know that you are a Christian? And you probably say, yes. I'm going to ask you how. If you think people know you're a Christian, how do they know you're a Christian? The way you live your life, okay? The way you live your life. Brother Jeremiah Tatum held a meeting for us. He preaches at the Willow Avenue congregation. And he said in that meeting an example of himself. When he was in college, he was a Christian. When he was going to college, he was in a biology class seeking a secular career. And for a year, maybe 2 years, for a long period of time, he was in this biology class with this other person. You know, they team you together. And they would have, you know, the night sessions, long day sessions, this sort of thing. And after this long period of time, the question came up of church. And he said, this other student looked at him and said, well, I didn't know you were a Christian. And he said, that changed his life. He stopped seeking a secular career, and he went into the ministry. He said he wasn't going to let that happen again. And that needs to be our own way we want to live our own lives as well. But yes, by our conduct. He says, only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and not in any way terrified of the adversaries, which is to them a proof of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that from God. For you it has been granted on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now here is in me. But notice, by your conduct. Titus says in 2 and verse 12 that teaching us to denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, godly in this present age. We know that. He tells us to watch and stand fast in the faith. Be brave, be strong, let all that you do be done with love. Notice this statement. A group, a society, a state, a nation, or world that turns from God, that is, that removes God from their hearts, their minds, they do just exactly what Israel did in the book of Judges. There's a whole lot of things in the book of Judges, but this statement is found several times in the book of Judges. Anybody know right off what you think it is? You'll know it when I put it up there. Because it seems like where we're at today. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That sounds a lot about this country in which we live today, doesn't it? You know, if I like blue stripes, and I think that's what ought to be done, everybody should wear blue stripes, and if you're not wearing blue stripes, then Mark's offending me today because he don't have on blue stripes. So Mark, you got to wear blue stripes. But you see how that works? If Mark likes a red and black, a red and blue striped shirt, and he thinks that's what everybody ought to wear, then I'm offending him. How do you ever come to a compromise? If we're all doing what we think is right in our own eyes. You know, there's only one right, I'll just phrase it that way, there's only one right in this world in which we live, and it comes from God. And we need to follow what God teaches and follow His Word in all of our lives. Isaiah said, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. You know, and I guess it's sad. It seems sadder to me, and of course I'm not all that old. But I can remember when I was quite young, and I can remember from my parents, and maybe you can too, going back into the early 60s, 50s, maybe not, so I'm shaking your head. but things that are happening today wasn't even thought of then, to a degree. You know? It wasn't. There was a definite standard of right and wrong. Not that everything matched the Holy Scriptures, but there was a definite standard of right and wrong. Kept a secret. That's true, but that went along with that frame of mind back then too. Yes. Yes. And y'all can probably heard stories about where maybe a young girl became pregnant out of wedlock, but nobody knew it but maybe the family. I'm not saying those things are all right or all good and bad. There's probably a side to both of them, but I'm just saying that when you look at it then and look at it now, it's like somehow Satan has flung the doors wide open. And do we not call evil good today? Some people do. And good evil? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, if you look back in the Scriptures, when, of course, there's, you know, God, we talk about God destroying nations. You know, if only they could have found, somebody tell me the number, if only they could have found how many in Sodom and Gomorrah, righteous souls, God would have saved them. Right. But God is still God. I mean, we need to at least put that somewhere in our mind, don't we? God is still God. And when the nation, and notice in those Old Testament, that's kind of getting off my topic, but then those Old Testament stories about those issues, in some places it does specify that, in like Sodom and Gomorrah, that everybody was given over to evil. But, you know, God destroyed a nation sometimes because of the government of the nation. Because the government turned the people to idols or allowed the people to turn to idols and so forth, he destroyed the nation. We're lost. And that's a good statement, one that I meant to mention a while ago, when we talked about when this nation or world or people or whatever takes God out. When you take God, and you just said it in a very excellent way, when you take God out of the picture, what do you have? Do you have, I won't say you can't have, but are you likely? I'm using the wrong phrase other than what my mind is trying to come up with. But if you take God out of the picture, let me just put it this way. If you take God out of the picture, where are morals? There isn't any, because morals come from God, don't it? From the very beginning. What's the first thing God did for Adam and Eve when they sinned in the garden? He clothed them. Morals. Morals. We take God out of the picture, there are no morals. Everybody, just like judges, everybody does what's right in their own eyes. Though all of us as Christians were formerly in darkness, we're now light in the Lord, and such we should walk as children of light. With that phrase, I want to just remind you that before we were Christians, we were sinners. Before we were Christians, we were sinners. So we were in darkness, but now as a Christian, we are in the light. He says that better in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 11. Now in verses 9 and 10, he lists several sins. And some of them, in our minds, we would classify as big sins and some maybe smaller sins. But, you know, sin is sin to God. But he says, such were some of you. Now you're washed, you're sanctified, you're justified in the name of the Lord Jesus. And we know that's true. So, with all that we've said, and I appreciate all your comments today, let our light shine. Let our light shine that we might be that city sitting on a hill that cannot be hidden. You know, that description is a city on a hill. Maybe you've been driving, you're on a trip or something, you're going down the road, and it's maybe, I've never driven through Kansas, I hope to one day, but they say you can drive forever and never see nothing. But you know, but when you see that light, maybe it's a neon sign, whatever it is, you know you're heading to that sign. That's the same way with this. A city on a hill, the city that draws people to it. People can know where they're going then. May we all let the world know that we are the children of light and stand strong for His truth, His righteousness in this wicked and perverse generation. 2 Chronicles chapter 7 and verse 14 says, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land." And we need a healing in our land. But you know, it can come from each one of us as we influence someone else. And we can heal this land. Again, I appreciate all your comments. And I guess that was a 5-minute bell, wasn't it? Yeah. Anybody have a question over anything we talked about before we stop? Right, and you're exactly right. It bothers me too, but you got to understand, and you understand this, how Satan works. You know, how Satan works. We're going to talk about it later, kind of get into that just a little bit, but those that are pro-abortion, those that are for abortion, you won't hear any of them, I've never heard any of them talk about the baby. They don't talk about the baby. They talk about the choice of the mother. It's always about the choice of the woman. But I just want to end with this, unless somebody has another comment. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you hear the phrase pro-choice, just think logically. Pro-choice is pro-death, because a human being always dies. Well, again, going back to this world in which we live, a lot of people don't want responsibility. Oh, yeah. Right. That's why I said when you take God out of the equation, then there's no guide to follow. Everybody does what they want to. There are, and I don't usually cover this in my talk later on, but there are 36 families wanting to adopt for every baby that's aborted. Thank you.